This is ESPN Radio.
Football Friday here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, all guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And Gojo, that's where we got to go right now to bring on ESPN college football analyst David Pollack, who joins us on that Goodyear Hotline. And David, I got to ask you, what was your reaction to the college football playoff rankings that were released on Tuesday? And what was the thing that surprised you the most?
First of all, I'd like to point out that we got three linemen right now.
Hello!
That's freaking amazeballs. But I'm just saying, I was surprised by a couple things. I would say the first thing that stuck out was Cincinnati. And I didn't expect Cincinnati to be one or two, but I did expect them to be in the top four. I expect them to be above Ohio State. They had a better win than Ohio State. They have a top 10 win with Notre Dame at their place, and they don't have a loss. So I kind of expected at this point in the season, Ohio State's meat of their schedule very much is coming up. I thought they might at least be ahead of them, you know, in the rankings. And then I thought Oklahoma. I didn't know where Oklahoma would be, but I was kind of surprised they were at eight. So as much as Cincinnati's been upset about where they're at, because if you watch Cincinnati against Tulane and Navy, they kind of floundered around and made the game way closer than they needed to. Oklahoma's done the same thing of West Virginia, Kansas State, Texas being down big, like a bunch of opportunities to do the same. And so I think they've kind of kicked the can down the road and made the games very competitive. And so they put them at eight. So I think those are the biggest takeaways for me.
David, was any part of you surprised by Alabama already up at number two despite that loss to Texas A&M?
No, I wasn't surprised. Again, I don't think Golic would have been upset with any order, honestly. I don't care that much, because I do know that it's all going to work itself out. But if you're asking me, as a guy that went to Georgia and obviously wants Georgia to win a national title and be successful, you know, if you're asking me a team I don't want to play, I don't want to play Alabama, because you know, you got a quarterback in Bryce Young that continues to grow and just get better and better and better. And they got a lot of balance on their team. Their defense is not elite, no, but it's really good, and they're going to make you earn it. So, you know, I think I look at Alabama, I'm not surprised, because they're the team I would not want to face the most. And guess what? Georgia's going to face them in the SEC championship game, and that's going to take care of itself, because if Alabama wins, Alabama's in. And there are no complaints. If Alabama loses, Alabama's out.
David, one of the surprises from last week's college football slate for me was the upset, Michigan State beating Michigan, come-from-behind victory, and Kenneth Walker III going off for five touchdowns. In your opinion, has he catapulted himself to the front of the conversation when it comes to Heisman Trophy favorites?
He's absolutely number one on my ballot. There's no doubt about it. I get a little bit frustrated with this, because I was around people today, and they were talking about it, and they're like, well, he's not really that good. Really? Well, go watch his tape. Like, it ain't like Michigan State are a bunch of killers up front that are, you know, moving bodies out of the way. Safeties are spinning down from Michigan. They can't take an angle on him. He's so fast. And then he makes one or two guys miss in the hole and goes the distance. So he's the most outstanding player in college football. Michigan State didn't have him. They would have at least two losses, probably three or four losses. That's how good I think that cat is.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, talking to David Pollack from College Game Day. Going to be out here Cincinnati ahead of the Bearcats matchup against Tulsa this weekend here. And, David, you brought up the Georgia Bulldogs. We all know everything about that defense. It's one of the biggest name defenses. They've been as dominant as any unit that we've seen. As an alum there and as someone who studies the game the way you do now, is there any part of that offense that's worried you this season? Like, is there something you think might show up when they play a Bama that actually can be a crack in the armor for this team?
Yeah, I mean, they're not. Listen, I know when you go to efficiency, they're one of the better teams in the country, which I think are important. There's important stats that are good, but they're not a bunch of guys up front that are just a bunch of killers. They do enough up front in the run game, but they're not elite at throwing, and they're not elite at running. So I think they have balance and they're a good offense, but they're not a great offense by any stretch. So I think it gives you room for pause. If you watched last week, Stetson Bennett had two turnovers that against Florida that you just hate to see. You know, one of them was a real wheel route to Fitzpatrick, and the safety's clearly, you know, over the top of the route. You can't throw that ball deep. Another one was underthrowing a guy that was wide open in the end zone, you know, 50 yards down the field. He didn't throw it far enough. So those are points that you leave on the field. I know the defense is good. Now, listen, the news about Adam Anderson – you know, this week he's probably going to be off the team for good now. That's a huge loss. You're talking about a guy that's going to be a first or second round pick, getting in the trouble off the field, that now takes this unit, takes a guy off this unit that has incredible versatility. Their leading sacker, another guy that, again, Candy, you know this more than anybody too, is when you can rotate bodies up front and stay fresh, it makes it easy, and it makes you easier to be dominant. When you start taking some of that depth away and you got to play more and more snaps, you do wear down. And instead of them wearing down all the time because you're like a hockey shift of coming in waves at you, you know, you start to wear down. So it's a big blow for them. So they also lost their left tackle yesterday too. So there's a lot going on at Georgia now that we're going to see how they respond with.
David, I got to ask you about a big-time matchup in the SEC West. Auburn visiting Texas A&M in what feels like a New Year's Six elimination game. How do you see this one playing out at Kyle Field?
I'll tell you what, man. I don't know if there's been a turnaround, as big of a turnaround as anybody in the country as there has been in Bo Nix. And, I mean, he goes from being benched and talked about how, you know, he's not the guy to all of a sudden spinning being all over the place and completing over 70% of his passes and 80% last week and 70%, you know, the week before. And those were against, you know, Ole Miss and Arkansas, who were two ranked teams. So he's completely changed this offense, Bobo and company, with the balance on offense. Now it's fun to watch Auburn now, like, actually have an offensive system that looks capable of doing stuff. Not in the past where you're running goes or bubble screens or hitches, easy routes. Like, now they're, you know, they look like an offense that's very competent. Now, going on the road to Kyle Field against a great defense, I think the game's decided by Zach Calzada. And Calzada against Alabama looked like a world beater, dude. He was on fire. He played his best game we've ever seen him play by far. And then since that point, he's kind of cooled off again too. So, you know, I think the quarterback matchup will be fun. But A&M at home with a great defense against an Auburn team that I think they're rolling. I mean, to consider them 6-2, I would have never said that at this point. And they got momentum. But the way Bo Nix is playing, it's hard to bet again.
Yeah, it's going to make that Iron Bowl awfully fun at the end of this season here too, to look forward to. David, we appreciate you giving us some time, man. Going to be a blast for College Game Day out here tomorrow in Cincinnati. Enjoy it, and we'll talk to you again soon, all right?
Lineman for life.
There we go. Plenty of beef right here on Canty and Golic Jr. We're brought to you by Goodyear. With you for every mile on the road to greatness. Goodyear, more driven. It always is good when we get the heavy package on the field, right? We just had an offensive lineman score a touchdown for the Colts last night. Chris, we're riding high here.
Oh, no question about it. We got a backup lineman and Pinter getting in the end zone. Carson Wentz going through that progression and waiting for him to release in the flat. I mean, there was a little part of me that smiled when that happened, because the big fellas usually don't get that kind of love. But on Canty and Golic Jr., we're going to celebrate all the wins when it comes to the big guys being able to get down and get into the end zone.
Every time an offensive lineman scores a touchdown, a defensive lineman, hey, even a fullback, an angel gets its neck roll. Coming up next, Aaron Rodgers made headlines for his comments today. But the Packers organization, are they completely blameless in this entire situation? We'll get to that next. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
It's a Football Friday here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear hotline. And as the Cleveland Browns go through the formality of releasing Odell Beckham Jr., if you think you know where he's going to land, you can actually bet on it now. The odds on OBJ, we'll have that a little bit later on in the 4 o'clock hour. But right now, Gojo, we got to get back to what we led the show with, and that is the guy that wants to be the center of attention when it comes to the NFL season, one Aaron Rodgers, who was on the Pat McAfee show today to tell his side of the story. And let's just say it this way, a lot of what he said didn't necessarily pass the smell test. Am I wrong for seeing it that way?
No, you're absolutely right. I think we knew this was coming, right? As soon as Aaron Rodgers was put on the COVID-19 list for the Packers, we all said, eventually we're going to hear about this, and it's going to be on Pat's show, because that's where he's gone to constantly espouse his opinions. It's the only interview pretty much that he grants week to week. But
it's a safe space for him, right? Safe space.
It 100% is. And it's like, this is no disrespect to Pat and those guys. They do a good show over there. But this is a spot for Aaron Rodgers to be able to come and, you know, say his piece. And so Aaron Rodgers did just that. And along the way, Chris, he had about, for a guy who had to constantly over the course of this say, I am not an anti-vaxxer, I am not an anti-vax guy, boy oh boy, he hit the bingo card with about every one of the anti-vax buzzwords you could along the way.
No question about it. He had witch hunt in there. He said that
the woke mob,
the woke mob culture. And cancel culture. Like, I mean, he hit the political trifecta with
Joe Rogan.
Yeah, I mean, you could go on and on. I mean, the more he talked, the more I cringed. But it just comes back to one simple thing. Nobody is criticizing Aaron Rodgers for making a decision not to take the vaccine. There have been other players that have made that decision at the beginning of this football season. And although it was a blip on the radar, there was some initial conversation. Once we got to the business of the games on the field, all of that went away. Nobody's continuing to talk about Cole Beasley's stance and not taking a vaccine. People aren't doing that when it comes to Kirk Cousins, nor Carson Wentz, who we saw play on Thursday Night Football. This is something that everybody has been able to move past because we actually have football to entertain us. But with Aaron Rodgers, the fact that he misled the media and then, on top of that, decided that he wasn't going to wear a mask in spaces that he was supposed to wear a mask according to the protocols for unvaccinated players – that's where this becomes a problem, and I think that he's doing everything that he can within his power to distract away from the fact that he put himself above everybody else that's unvaccinated, that's following the protocols that the NFL and the NFLPA set out.
Yeah, and we've now heard from the Packers, too, on this. Matt LaFleur, their head coach, was asked in the press conference about Aaron Rodgers and his following of the protocols in their facility, since that has been at the center of this, too.
Hey, Matt, earlier you said you're 100% confident in following protocols inside the building. Can you explain why Aaron Rodgers would be allowed to be unmasked for those media availabilities?
That's not what I said. I said within our football space, meeting rooms, walk through everything we do in that area.
Are there any rules for media availabilities?
I don't pay attention to the media rules.
So that's all fine and good. And Aaron Rodgers, by the way, said as much in all of this. He said, when I was inside the building, I followed the protocol every step of the way. He cited that he believed the protocols as it pertained to the media availability were the ones that he didn't agree with fundamentally. He said he claimed he was testing every day for COVID-19 before going into the building. He said we're all 6 feet apart in that room. Everyone else who's in that room is required to be vaccinated to be there. He had all these reasons, Chris, but then that was when he chose to quote Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and say that it is our moral obligation to not comply with rules that we believe are unjust. There is nothing in this about justice because, again, this was a guy who chose his words very carefully to make sure that people weren't going to get on him about not being vaccinated and then claims to comply in all these other areas and around the building except for the one area where if he were to comply, people would notice. This is a guy who didn't want to be hassled about this and who didn't want to have to deal with the public scrutiny. And if that's at the core of all this, Chris, then just say that. Say, I was afraid of having to deal with what everyone had to say. Say that I was not willing to stand up and deal with that scrutiny because I didn't want to have to go through it here. Don't try and act like there's some martyrdom in all of this because, my God, I don't know how much more transparent it can look.
No question about it. And for him to invoke Martin Luther King Jr. is offensive to me. Like that's the part that doesn't make sense. And it's actually hurtful that Aaron Rodgers would even take it there because to compare civil disobedience and the struggle for equal rights and equal treatment under the law and based on where, you know, minorities were at this point in time in American history when Dr. King was alive, like this is not that type of situation. This ain't that. Don't try to give us this false equivalence. It's disrespectful. It's demeaning. I don't understand why he wanted to take it to that space. He didn't have to do it. The reality is that there are protocols that are set in place. And if you want to make that a part of your argument, then you do so. But at the same time, wearing a mask and abiding by the protocols, because those are set forth to keep people safe in the middle of a global pandemic. That's what this is about. And he selfishly put people at risk because he didn't want the criticism that other players that chose not to be vaccinated are facing. That's what this was. This isn't about Aaron Rodgers trying to champion somebody, trying to be a voice for the voiceless. It has nothing to do with that. It has everything to do with him not wanting to be scrutinized for having an anti-vax stance. That's what it is. Keep Martin Luther King Jr. out your mouth when it comes to this particular issue, bruh. That's wrong.
You're right. It's again in that spot based on everything we've seen so far. You can call me a cynic if you want to, but I just find it very difficult to believe that the one policy you took a moral issue with just happened to be the one. Because he claimed, I'm going to take his words here, he claimed that he was following the protocol around the rest of the building and the rest of the time, except for this one area where he could be seen in public. And then based on the policies that we know, like the one he's in right now, Aaron Rodgers is only missing as much time as he is because he's an unvaccinated player according to the league. And so that is how we got to this point. Aaron Rodgers is a smart guy in a lot of senses, smart enough to know if he shows up to a press conference with a mask on, everyone is going to know, and then he's going to have to address it. And Chris, you've pointed out the organization, the culpability in this, because we went through this yesterday. The NFL, the NFLPA, and the Green Bay Packers all knew about this. Mm-hmm. Aaron Rodgers came to them with the homeopathic medicine that he was trying before the season, wanted it to consider him vaccinated. They said, nah, we're good on that. And so he went back to them. So they all knew the drill. And after an offseason where they were at odds with the quarterback almost every step of the way, it seems clear that the organization tried to do whatever it could to look the other way on this, to not continue to hurt feelings with the quarterback at the center of their organization.
No, you're right about that. Like, that's what it ultimately comes down to. Aaron Rodgers not wanting to be on front street about a decision that he made. And if he's so adamant about trying to champion or trying to fight against this establishment or this culture that wants to demonize players or people that take this stance, then why not be more forthright with your position on the vaccine? Why try to lead media members down the road of I've been immunized and that I'm not going to judge other teammates that choose to make a different choice? Why lead us down the road to make us think that you've been vaccinated when it's clear that that's not where you're at with it? Why do that? I mean, how can you advocate for something while also hiding the fact that you're not a part of that group? That's the part that doesn't make any sense. That's why it doesn't pass the smell test for me. So no matter what comes out of Aaron Rodgers' mouth right now, I have a hard time being able to believe that it's genuine and to actually give any validity to it. And I'm starting to feel that way about the Green Bay Packers organization and Matt LaFleur as well.
Among the many things, and this is from Lindsey Jones here, who's a writer at The Athletic, among the many things Rodgers said today was that an NFL doctor told him if he was vaccinated, he couldn't catch or spread COVID. A league source says Rodgers never spoke to the league medical doctor or one of the jointly appointed infectious disease experts, though it was offered. So we can go through and go line for line down the list of Aaron Rodgers' claims later and see just how they stack up against the smell test. Because, spoiler alert, based on readily available evidence we have so far, most of it is not holding up. But coming up next, we talked about Odell Beckham Jr. leaving Cleveland already. He's released earlier today. We'll head to the NBA to check in on another star who is looking for that said same treatment. We'll do that after this word from Indeed. All right, guys. We get it. It's your business, and you want to be involved in all the decisions, especially who to hire. Then you need Indeed, the all-in-one hiring platform that makes it easy to attract, screen, and interview candidates all in one place. With smart tools like Instant Match, you instantly get a list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your job description the minute you sponsor a job. Spend less time sifting through resumes and more time saying you're hired. Visit Indeed.com/credit. Back after this, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And Mike, we know this is a Football Friday, but we got to get to a little bit of basketball news because this just broke this afternoon from Woj, senior NBA insider for ESPN. According to him, the Philadelphia 76ers fined All-Star guard Ben Simmons his $360,000 game salary for missing Thursday night's victory over the Detroit Pistons and plan to continue fining him until he cooperates with team physicians on his mental health and fulfills other basketball-related obligations, sources told ESPN. The Sixers will again place Ben Simmons' future salary into escrow account. Earlier this season, Philadelphia released Simmons' money from escrow after he had been initially cooperative on a path toward returning to play. Now, Mike, we've talked about this issue a couple of times here now with Ben Simmons, and it feels like to me that Simmons is weaponizing the issue of mental health against the 76ers in order to get his way and to avoid being fined. And I'm just not here for it, man. I don't I don't feel like this is one of those circumstances where this is genuine, because it doesn't sound like Ben Simmons would be opposed to going to play for another team right now. It just feels like he doesn't want to play for the 76ers, and he's going to do everything within his power to shoot his way out of town and to avoid being fined any money in the process.
Yeah, Chris, I think that's the part of this, the timing of it, that's tough, because we know everyone is rightly sensitive to mental health issues here, but the time this came along, well after we heard everything over the course of this summer about how he's done playing in Philadelphia, about how he wants out of there, about how he wants to be with a different team here. And I think the way this is phrased also has a clear indicator, like his mental readiness to play. Because, Chris, we see this all the time when it comes to physical injuries, right? Players have trainers outside the building. Players get second opinion from doctors outside the building, and it doesn't always play well with what's going on in the building. Like, from a physical injury standpoint, we can look at the Michael Thomas case recently with the Saints, right?
Mm-hmm.
He elected to have an off-season procedure well after it seemed like his coach and the organization were comfortable with, but it was best for him. And so Ben Simmons, to an extent, can fall back on that same idea here. But the context that we have leading up to that just makes it harder and harder to try and buy this as sincere.
No question about it, especially when you're not being cooperative with the team officials when it comes to trying to assess your mental health and whether or not you're going to be capable of contributing to the team. Like, if you're in a situation where you need help and your mental health is in jeopardy, like you're seeking help, I think you have an obligation to try to rope your employers in as much as you possibly can. Now, that may also include you seeing specialists outside of the building, but if they're offering assistance in helping that and trying to evaluate your mental state, then based on, you know, your contract and your obligations, your responsibilities toward the club, like, you need to be a part of trying to cooperate with them so they can understand the extent of whatever mental issue that you're dealing with. So that's the part to me that doesn't necessarily seem like it lines up when it comes to players that are actually dealing with mental health crises during the middle of their season. Like we saw with the Atlanta Falcons, they stepped away, like they allowed Calvin Ridley to step away, and they understood that he's going through something right now. We're going to give him the space and time in order to do that. This doesn't necessarily feel like that same situation with Ben Simmons. It just feels like an extension of everything we've heard this offseason, where Ben Simmons is done in Philadelphia and he doesn't want to have anything to do with the team, and yet he's trying to force the team's hand in terms of making a decision sooner rather than later. And on the short end of it will be Daryl Morey in terms of the return on investment that they're going to get for trading Ben Simmons.
Canny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canny. And Chris, I think you're right. Like, contextually, it makes it tough, because when it comes to all this stuff, I am really predisposed to saying, hey, you know what? We see this all the time with physical injuries, right? Doctors that are part of the team work for the team. They're trying to get you back there as fast as possible, and sometimes that timeline is not always what's best for the player.
Sure.
I could buy that here, too, in a normal circumstance, because in a lot of other instances, this really strikes me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, the first time where we're hearing about a team's role in a player's mental health journey, right? Whether it was Calvin Ridley or Lane Johnson, we didn't really hear much about how the team was involved. We've heard that a lot of these organizations now have mental health experts on staff to try,
yes,
and help out with this, but we've never heard it talked about as almost a requirement in this way, because that's generally not how medicine in the building works, right?
No, it's not how it works. I mean, you usually have professionals that are there, and the team makes sure that they know that the players are aware of those services, those resources, in case they were to need them. And usually a lot of it's like anonymous. It's nondescript, so it's like it's not one of those things where everybody in the building knows exactly what's going on with you. It's very much so private. And that's the part that surprises me a little bit with what's going on in Philadelphia, because if Ben Simmons does need help, teams are usually, you know, they keep a little bit of separation between what's going on with the player's mental health and what's going on with, you know, the player in their role with the respective team and their obligations on that side of it. So the fact that Ben Simmons doesn't necessarily want to cooperate seems a little bit strange to me, because, again, teams usually do a good job of separating that portion of it from everything else that's regarding sports. So that's a little bit sticky, and I can understand the skepticism that a lot of people outside of sports would meet that with in terms of the Sixers' interest in all of this. But if you're Ben Simmons and you're seriously dealing with an issue, I don't understand why you wouldn't give the team an opportunity to allow their mental health professionals to evaluate you. If it's a serious issue, then that is what it is. I don't necessarily look at this as one of those, if he's really dealing with something, that they're going to be dismissive of it and they're just going to chalk it up to him wanting to get out of town. But to me, the fact that he won't cooperate seems like this is more an extension of Ben Simmons not wanting to be there.
Yeah, the fact that he won't even clue them in. Because even if you're going to get outside help, keeping the medical staff on the team in the loop, having everyone understand the plan you're on, that seems to be just yet another layer of disconnect between Ben Simmons and the 76ers. So again, Ben Simmons fined the $360,000 game salary for missing Thursday's game, and the Sixers plan to resume fining him until he cooperates with team physicians on his mental health issues and fulfills his other basketball-related obligations. This according to Adrian Wojnarowski. Coming up next, though, let's get back to Odell Beckham Jr., where he ends up next, because now if you want to bet on it and you really think he's going to end up with the Las Vegas Raiders, we got a place you can do that. We will tell you what the odds look like next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Friday here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. If your pet is hurt in a car accident, Progressive pays up to $1,000 in vet expenses with free pet coverage. Visit Progressive.com. And Gojo, the Cleveland Browns are making it official today, releasing Odell Beckham Jr. after 2.5 seasons with the Dog Pound. His final numbers in 29 games, 210 targets, 114 catches, 1,586 yards, 7 touchdowns, 3.9 receptions per game, and 54 yards per game. And so everybody can admit that that's not what the Cleveland Browns organization expected when they did the deal with the New York Giants for Odell Beckham Jr. But Andrew Berry, their general manager, and Kevin Stefanski, they've had enough, and they feel like it's in the organization's best interest to move on. So that leaves the question, where does OBJ land? And now we finally got some odds on exactly who the favorites are in being able to get his services.
Yeah, so let's take a look at this. This gets interesting because a number of ways we can go with this. But first and foremost is everyone wants to know where the guy who's still very good at football, despite what we saw, had some injury trouble in Cleveland, didn't fit into a timing and rhythm offense, all these things that we've already heard. He's going to play good ball for somebody here. And so the odds right now have the Raiders as the favorite at plus 300, followed by the Ravens, the Patriots, the Chiefs, the Saints, the Packers, the Bills, and the 49ers going off at plus 1,000 towards the end of this one. Chris, not surprised that the Raiders show up in this one. Like, I understand the coaching situation certainly doesn't seem like the most solid ground here, but we know they love a deep threat out there. We know Derek Carr can actually get that done when he's got weapons that can go deep here. And that's an offense that's looking at the current AFC West saying, hey, man, we're open for business right now. We're happy to be the favorite if you'll let us.
No question about it. But here's the thing, though. With so much that's been going on with that organization, can you really afford to bring in somebody like OBJ? Like, that would be the question that I ask. I mean, we had the Henry Ruggs tragedy earlier this week. We had what happened with John Gruden a few weeks ago. Rich Bisaccia, interim head coach, in place. I don't know that the organization can handle all of the baggage that comes along with being able to sign OBJ in the middle of the season, getting him up to speed in the offense, and then having him be an integral part of whatever AFC West title run that this team is trying to go on. I understand the fit, but I just, from a head coaching standpoint, from a culture standpoint, I don't know if it necessarily is what you're looking for if you're the Raiders. Like, I just feel like there's going to be a lot of noise that's around that team because of this addition, and it's a situation where there's also a lot of other things that are going on there. So I don't know about that one. The Ravens, to me, would be interesting. I actually like the player in that offense. I just don't know about the personalities meshing between Beckham and the head coach. I spent a lot of time in Baltimore. I know John Harbaugh well. I mean, in terms of, you know, being a disciplinarian, in terms of it being his way or the highway, like, that's how John operates. And I don't know if Beckham is going to fit in that. Same thing with New England. So, I mean, I got to look at the Kansas City Chiefs as being one of those front-runner teams, the place that actually makes sense, where there's more of a relaxed feel. Andy Reid allows his players to show their personalities, be who they are. With Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, and, of course, Pat Mahomes, it feels like that would be a seamless fit, not only from an X's and O's standpoint, but also from a personality standpoint.
Yeah, that's why the Patriots seemed like a strange one to be as high on the list as they are here, Chris. And the fact that you've got a rookie quarterback that has not displayed a propensity for getting the ball deep downfield, right? For letting Odell do the thing that he does best. That to me, you mentioned the Chiefs, always, I think, going to be an intriguing option here. That offense, the universal solvent for wide receivers. But I really think the more and more we go along with this one, the Packers and the Bills are going to start to look really enticing.
Mm.
And I know for the Browns, that'd be a nightmare to see him end up in the AFC with a team like the Bills potentially. But for the Packers, all we've heard, and we know, I think I just saw Devontae Adams activated off the COVID-19 list today. You've got Alan Lazard still trying to work and get him back. Marquez Valdez-Scantling was there. None of the names I mentioned after Devontae Adams are better options talent-wise than Odell Beckham Jr., and we've seen Aaron Rodgers be able to go out there and play in an offense where it's, hey, get open and I'll fit the ball into a spot that no one else can. I know it's a little different with Matt LaFleur now, but I still feel like that one's got a good shot.
No, it does have a good shot, and it makes a lot of sense. I'd be curious to see how the Aaron Rodgers saga affects whether or not OBJ is in a hurry to go to Green Bay, because like, we still don't know what's going to happen on that front in the way of discipline with the organization or with the players. So I'd be interested to see, you know, how Odell Beckham Jr. in his camp looks at the Packers in terms of being a destination. But to me, the Chiefs are one that makes sense. And then you also hear grumblings about the New Orleans Saints. We know what their quarterback situation is with Jameis going down for the season. Taysom Hill, Trevor Siemian, I believe, is going to get the start in Week 9. But I just, with their quarterback situation being in flux, I don't know that that's where OBJ wants to go, because it seems like it's going to be another one of those run-centric offenses, a team that's going to rely on the run game and good defense in order to win, and not necessarily a team where Odell is going to be, you know, one of the focal points of the offense in terms of being heavy with the targets and the receptions. So I just, coming out of a situation in Cleveland where you know that they were going to run the ball, you know, most of the time, I don't know that Odell wants to sign up for another program like that. So I think he wants to go to an offense that's going to feature the quarterback and it's going to feature the passing game. And to me, there's only a couple of teams around the National Football League you can say that about that have the need at the receiver position.
Kanny Golick Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golick Jr. and Chris Kanny. Lamar Jackson telling people on Twitter, I can't do nothing for y'all. At the Ravens, not me. I can't do anything in this spot here. But getting the Twitter mob off his back, I don't blame you, Lamar. But I want to talk about Baker Mayfield, Chris, because I saw a lot of people saying, man, big-time game coming up for Baker this weekend. Has a chance to silence a lot of his critics now that Odell's gone. Like, what's changed? We've seen Odell so intermittently on the field there, and he's still got that broken non-throwing shoulder. I don't expect there to be any more added pressure on Baker this weekend. It'd be a great opportunity, but I think the reality of the situation would still lead you to believe this is a quarterback who's working through some things physically that are going to prevent him from really taking that bull by the horn, so to speak.
Yeah, we got to recalibrate the expectations for the Cleveland Browns based on Baker's injury. Like, we can't expect him to do the things that we saw him do in the second half of last year and on into the playoffs. Like, the guy has a torn labrum and a broken shoulder. Like, there's no way that he's going to be capable of playing up to the level that we saw in the first year of Kevin Stefanski's offense. Now, that being said, it doesn't mean that Cleveland can't be a playoff caliber team. But as far as the pressure with Baker goes, I don't think there's any added pressure. The organization clearly made a decision to choose him over Odell Beckham Jr. They're getting rid of the guy that was creating the disruption, the guy that was pointing at Baker as being the problem, as why the offense wasn't going and why the team was underachieving. Also, by the way, Cleveland still has that contract extension in Baker's locker that they're going to pay him somewhere in the mid to high 30s in average annual value. So to me, there's no more pressure on Baker Mayfield for the Browns making this move. This is clearly the organization siding with him, and he's going to be in Cleveland for the long term. And Browns fans and football fans around the National Football League just need to accept it.
The Browns right now, by the way, 10th seed in the AFC, which doesn't mean much because we know that thing is a whole ball of chaos that we're still trying to unload. Coming up next, though, we will try and unpack the ball of chaos that is college football in time for you to play some bets this weekend on ESPN Radio.